Labas and good afternoon. This is Kes. This is Dave with us, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial and live streaming audio at KTYM.com. Thanks for listening. Well, so here in Los Angeles, we had, what, a couple, 3 inches of rain. Now it's 80 degrees again. Incredible. Again, we like to bring you up to date on the weather in Lithuania, specifically the capital of Lithuania, Vilnius. And tonight it's 28 degrees, pretty chilly. But tomorrow it'll be up to 49. That's a nice day. And the evening temperature will be 32. And again, what'll happen is Monday, it'll be 52, evening temperature 33, and so it will go through the week. High 40s, low 50s, and at night just about freezing, which, again, we warn you, if you're traveling to Lithuania or Vilnius, the roads are kind of slick at night because of the ice, but the daytime temperatures are really warming up. 50 is a nice day in March in Lithuania. We also want to take this opportunity to wish a happy birthday to Ona Katilienė. Ona Katilienė, happy birthday to you. Jeannie Peters, happy birthday. These are all supporters of Independent Lithuanian Radio. And we love them all. Happy birthday to you, Jeannie Peters, Ona Katilienė. And a very special, special happy birthday to my mother-in-law, Salomeja Pakalnis, from my wife, Odra, and from me, Salomeja Pakalnis. Happy birthday to you. Ilgiausių metų. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but there's a great little website called Lithuania Tribune. It gives news in English, which makes it easier for many of us, especially us second generation Lithuanian Americans. And this is an interesting kind of article. Listen to this. David Kramer, he writes, "What Mr. Putin is really afraid of." Now, you've all been watching the news that Russian troops are in the Ukraine, and Mr. Putin denies that they're Russian troops. He says that they are pro-Russian militias in that part of the world. But anyway, there is only one solution to the Crimean crisis, writes David Kramer. That is the total withdrawal of the Russian troops from Crimea. David Kramer, the director of Freedom House NGO, is convinced. Otherwise, we are going to witness terrific consequences, Kramer said to reporters. Do you see the possibility to solve the Crimea problem with Russia right now? Some experts say that for Putin, it is a suitable moment and probably the only one to save the peninsula in the hands of Russia. What are the real motives of Mr. Putin, he writes. How do you see the solution to the Ukrainian situation? The only solution for the crisis in Crimea is for Russia to withdraw its forces. Now, again, Putin denies that it's his forces. At least he has so far. But David Kramer writes, the only solution for the crisis in Crimea is for Russia to withdraw its forces. And personally, I agree. Russia has broken numerous assurances binding bilateral and multilateral treaties. and fundamental principles of international law in its intervention. Not only is the entire peninsula living in fear of conflict, armed conflict, that is, but we can now see what life under Russian control and control would look like for Crimea. An investigative journalism outfit was raided by masked armed men and forced to shut down. Officials have been kidnapped. Mobs harass international observers. Journalists have been attacked. And media and communications are severely restricted. If you look at developments in Russia, this is unfortunately a suitable scenario for President Putin. But it is not a suitable scenario for people who seek democracy, the rule of law, and respect for human rights. Now, getting on the article for a little bit, have you noticed, if you've watched the news, how all, well, most of, anyway, the soldiers, the troops, the what, you know, whatever you want to call them, the militias, are masked? They don't want anybody to know who they are. I mean, it's sort of on the surface of the whole thing, it sort of tells the story. They don't want to be recognized by their own people. Back to the article, President Putin has certainly dug in. He doesn't take well to criticism of his actions or any doubts about his leadership or motives. Angela Merkel and others have said that he has lost touch with reality. How do you influence a person like that and the system that revolves exclusively around one personality? A unified, forceful, consistent, and categorical response from the U.S., the EU, and other countries is vital right now to push back against Russian aggression. The threat of more violence and aggression and the dawn of Russian control of Crimea is too grave of a threat to ignore what is happening now. All diplomatic measures should be on the table, and countries should be willing to put their money where their mouth is and support Ukraine in this tenuous, critical moment. And unfortunately, again, I digress from the article, unfortunately, Putin knows that militarily, no one can do anything about it. Putin says that Russia, not afraid of sanctions, is a threat to them. And how do you see the reaction of the USA and the EU? Are they ready to face real confrontation with the Kremlin? As we have seen in the past few days, the US and the EU have different levels of readiness to confront Russian aggression. However, to have any impact, they must be unified and coordinated in their actions. For sure, countries will be affected differently by the Russian actions as they unfold. But if the international community does not respond forcefully to Russian aggression, we will be horribly affected. Putin may not fear sanctions, but it's important to ask whether that is actually true. And if it is, why? The hysterical response by the Putin administration to the Magnitsky Act in the United States, which levied sanctions against individuals implicated in human rights abuses, suggests that the Russian government is in fact afraid of sanctions. Remember, the Magnitsky Act, you know, one of the things that that act did is it caused the Russians to say, well, Americans cannot any longer adopt Russian babies. I mean, what a weird response. But sanctions from the United States will likely not be enough. Given the ties between Russia and Europe, the ties between Russia's wealthy, there are many powerful people who have a lot to lose. That is a possible opening for European countries to exercise leverage and to force these people to reconsider their support for Putin. It is also important to keep in mind that Europe is in many ways financing the Putin administration with oil and gas revenues. European countries should think long and hard about their reliance on an authoritarian government for energy, which has time and again proved willing to use aggression and tactics It does not respect human rights at home and flouts international law and standards. How Lithuania and the Baltic states in general have to be prepared for? Putin already claimed Lithuania and Poland that they, quote, trained groups of Ukrainian extremists. This is an amazing statement. He says that the Lithuanians and the Polish have trained groups of Ukrainian extremists. The region is destabilized. What actions Russia is ready to take in the region? Rumors that NATO jets are patrolling the Lithuanian-Latvian borders. Freedom is well aware about the attempts of the regime countries, Russia in particular, to portray independent civil society as foreign agents, to label inconvenient truths as slander, and to youth initiatives as extremist. We have seen a number of successful events for civil society, media, business, and expert communities during the presidency of Lithuania, but Mr. Putin has always been paranoid about these types of normal civic activities that occur in democratic countries. While the allegations to Lithuania and Poland raise a question, if Mr. Putin is, quote, in touch with reality, large-scale training of the Russian Baltic Fleet in Kaliningrad can be and might be and is a reality. Generally, the press conference was targeting the Russian public to try to manipulate them and distort the processes happening in Ukraine. Whichever is the case, it was Russian troops who invaded the territory of Ukraine, violating its sovereignty and borders and the multilateral obligations of the Budapest Memorandum. The cynical attitude regarding international norms and double standards are appalling. Putin referred to the self-determination principle, but was that applicable to Chechnya? Or would that be applied to other parts of the Russian Federation? The precedent of the alleged protection of the Russian-speaking community is despicable and sets a very dangerous precedent. A similar stage scenario could be applied not only to the Baltic states, but also in protecting hundreds of thousands of Russians living in Germany or of a few million living in the United States. Imagine that. There are a number of international organizations which do monitor the human rights situation and the rights of ethnic minorities in particular, and various instruments that are available if concerns emerge. Russia hasn't even tried using them, and unfortunately, it's not a surprise, as Russian authorities are constantly violating human rights of its own people in Russia. I told you this last week, ladies and gentlemen. I've been talking about it for weeks, that Russians are the only government, at least that I know of, that will murder its own people to get what they want, at least in the modern world. Now, you know, we're not talking about places like Uganda or places in Africa where people are running around with machetes killing each other because of religious differences or some sort of cultural differences. The Russian government officially, in this century, in our lifetime, has murdered its own people. Maybe that's why all the soldiers are wearing these masks. All in all, currently Russia is acting as a rogue state, ignoring international and bilateral commitments and jeopardizing the entire international system, the system of order, which clearly is a huge concern for the entire civilized world. We'll be right back.
Уже гелюю марялю.
Now, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, there's been rumors of NATO jets scrambling, protecting the border of Lithuania, Latvia, and presumably Estonia, but the reports we have are Lithuania, Latvia. Anyway, Lithuania has real defense guarantees, according to President Dalia Grybauskaitė, after a visit to the Navy on Friday. During a visit to the Klaipeda port, together with Defense Minister Jonas Olekas, Chief of Defense Lieutenant General Arvydas Pocius, and Navy Commander Fleet of Admiral Kęstutis Macijauskas, she surveyed the warship fleet and discussed the readiness of the Navy to respond to violations of the ocean or sea border. Grybauskaitė said after the visit that Lithuania's Navy and NATO allies are ready to ensure security in the Baltic region. In the face of an openly demonstrated Russian military power and maneuvers of the Russian naval fleet that is inconsistent with international agreements, she said, Lithuania highly appreciates the rapid NATO decision to step up the forces in the region. This proves that Lithuania and the entire Baltic region have real defense guarantees, she said. The president was at the Air Force Aviation Base in Zoknay, which is right outside of Cholet. Okay, it's right there. If you know where Cholet is in the northern part of Lithuania, that's where Zoknay Air Force Base is. It's basically on the edge of town. And on Wednesday, she was there to assess the functioning of Lithuania's and NATO's air surveillance and defense system. The United States sent additional six F-15 fighter jets to Lithuania earlier this week to step up the air surveillance and defenses. Grybauskaitė emphasized that regional stability requires more active joint NATO exercises on land and on sea. You know, you see, the real question here is this a sign? Is this something that, again, we talked about this last week? You know, people didn't have the 24-hour news cycle that we have now. Is this a sign to get out? Is this a sign that Russia has intentions of rebuilding its quote-unquote empire, call it Soviet, call it whatever? Or is this a sign that NATO is ready to defend the Baltics? I don't know. Maybe you do. Okay, we're going to switch a little lighter note. I don't know if it's a lighter note, but it's kind of an interesting story. Stiff competition, funeral homes fight over corpses in Lithuania. This is a story out of the Viktoras Stulovas has been in a medically induced coma for 3 days following a vascular surgery. When his worried son, Ramūnas, received a phone call he will never forget. A woman, quote, a woman who introduced herself as a member of the staff at the local funeral home extended her condolences to me, he said, for the death of my father, and, with great sympathy, offered to handle all necessary funeral arrangement, according to Ramūnas. He recoiled in shock at the call. You must have the wrong number, he said. My father is still alive. In truth, his 72-year-old father had indeed passed away. In the meantime, the first to hear the tragic news, however, was not the man's own family, but a funeral home looking for new business. Someone from a funeral home called the family first, asked Raimundas Porčius of Lithuania's Funeral Service Association. That's kind of extreme in this type of business. Former Interior Minister Romansis Vaitekūnas recalled an episode when a hearse traveling from Lithuania to Latvia was stopped by funeral home workers who removed the body, dressed it in cheaper clothes, and laid it in a low-budget coffin. Relatives reported the case to investigators, but, Vaitekūnas said, how many similar or more callous cases have never been brought to light. The competition within Lithuania's funeral industry is so intense that it has boiled over into threats, corruption, vandalism, arson, and yes, even murder. It is a business known worldwide for turning large profits with relatively low levels of investment, expertise, or staff. Death is a big moneymaker, Vaitakuna said. It has always been that way. Social commentator Tomas Viluckas agreed, telling reporters that Lithuania presents a special case. Death has been commercialized in all of Western Europe, but what makes things worse in Lithuania is that we still haven't developed strong business ethics. Therefore, we see funeral homes waging war against each other. One high-profile skirmish was recently played out in Klaipeda, a historic city along the Baltic coast. In October of last year, funeral home owner Ludas Statkus was arrested and charged with torching a $60,000 Mercedes-Benz hearse owned by a business partner turned rival, Vaidas Ceponis. Ceponis said that this was his fourth vehicle destroyed by fire in recent years. He said he had long suspected Statkus, who has since been released from custody and now awaits a trial. Meanwhile, prosecutors have also charged Statkus with operating an illegal morgue in a garage among the blocks of apartments in northern Klaipeda. There, according to police records, he disemboweled cadavers, flushed remains down the toilet, and dressed bodies in preparation for burial. The local cadaver registry shows that until the police investigation began, all corpses from a certain medical examiner were sent to Statkus' funeral home, according to a witness in the case. Federal investigators are also looking into Statkus' other activities in an alleged scheme involving a local medical examiner and former Statkus colleague. The remains of poor or unknown persons were given to Statkus for preparation. Pretending to be relatives of the deceased, a medical examiner or his accomplices would collect government benefits of around $500 per body. Police records show the medical examiner was arrested and later freed, pending further investigation. A resident of the nearby town of Skuodas told reporters that the medical examiner is known for requesting extra payments in exchange for expedited services, including handling the body of her brother, who had died in an auto accident. He rubbed his fingers mischievously, said Vilma Pranskunina, signaling that we should grease his palm. In a business known for unusual and individual tactics, I'm laughing about people dying, but this is incredible. In a business known for unusual individuals and tactics, such payments are business as usual. Some funeral homes pay medical staff and the police over 200 euros for tips on the whereabouts of new corpses, known as fresh commodities. They then call the relatives or dispatch their representatives to sell their services. Statistically, there's a shortage of cadavers, said Porches of the Funeral Services Association, that has triggered this sick competition. There's a shortage of cadavers because, something like 700,000 Lithuanians have emigrated. But anyway, a former Klaipeda County police officer told reporters that as a rookie, he was approached by a senior officer who asked him if he wanted some legal, quote-unquote, perks to pad his salary. When he became curious, the older officer explained he could make $120 a week. This is equivalent, to his whole salary each time he leaked information about a new corpse to a funeral home. I was not particularly hip on the idea, but I ultimately gave in, said the former officer, who would only be identified by his first name, Algirdas. The officer said that on several occasions he was handed more than $100 at the end of his shift, adding that in Kaunas the situation is, quote, even crazier. Still, despite his initial misgivings, Algirdas said, I don't think I did anything illegitimate. A funeral home, sooner or later, would have been called in anyway. A funeral homeowner in Kaunas, Lithuania's second largest city, said many doctors in local reanimation wards, I don't know what a reanimation ward is, but that's the word they use in this translation, and hospices work hand-in-hand with funeral homes that pay for information on recently deceased patients. There is even a type of internal regulation in this quote-unquote black market. Doctors get really upset if a junior medical staffer breaks the unwritten rule informing a relative of the death. This is strictly the job of several and few and select doctors who always have business cards of selected funeral homes handy. Former Interior Minister Vaitekūnas told reporters that Lithuania's funeral business has always been extremely, that's his word, competitive. And despite the recent string of violent crimes, the situation actually is not getting worse. Bribery and gruesome forms of competition, he asserted, were not limited to the funeral industry. Opinions vary as how to regulate and deal with the problem. Darius Petrošius, a member of Lithuania's parliament, who also operates his own funeral home in Tauragė, contends that oversight of the industry is adequate. In Tauragė, for instance, Petrošius said local authorities swiftly shut down shady undertakers that began operating in the city. Now, Porges of the Funeral Service Association is less optimistic. He said he believes the industry can be reined in, but only with combined sustained efforts by police, public health watchdogs, lawmakers, and the public. Unfortunately, he says, there's a big mess in the funeral sector, and I don't see it being cleaned up anytime soon. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Putin invading parts of the Ukraine, and the Lithuanian funeral industry being corrupt. Such is life in Eastern, Central, and Southern Europe now. This is Kęstutis Deividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. Bye-bye, and thanks for listening. Ačiū.